We finished our session this morning, a little bit in advance. We only had competition committee matters this morning, and Jeff Fisher is here to go through some of the rule changes that we passed. As you know, this meeting is primarily about evaluating our rules, both from a safety standpoint and what we think we can do to improve and make the game better. I think we've made some very significant progress on both of those fronts, which Jeff and Rich McKay will be here shortly. We also had a productive session as it relates to other matters, particularly stadium-related. We've got some stadium projects that are moving along, Minnesota, Buffalo, that are all, I think, very positive. And as you all know, I think you know, yesterday we spent a fair amount of time with a group of fans that demonstrated their passion and gave us quite a bit of feedback. I guess it was Monday now, but it was a great session for us. And I think we had a good opportunity over the last few days to get everybody on the same page of what are our priorities, what are our challenges, and what are our strategies going forward. So I would say that the meetings were incredibly successful and positive. So I think we're going to start, and Jeff's going to just go over some of the rule changes, right?
With respect to the playing rule proposals, we discussed at length this week, and all of them passed. One in particular, which I'll comment on here at the end. But playing rule proposal number one was the one that involves instant replay, the change where it's no longer going to be a penalty per se if a coach makes a mistake and challenges a play that's not reviewable. That passed. Playing rule proposal number two was the first player safety related proposal that involves the PAT and the field goal rush teams. We talked at length about the difficulty that we're having, the injuries that were taking place, the number of blocks versus the number of successful kicks. And so basically what we've done is we've put restrictions on the rush team's alignments, no more than six players to one side on the line of scrimmage. We've taken away the ability for them to block low from a rush team standpoint. There's two fouls involved. One's a five-yard penalty for illegal formation. If we have a push or a violation, that falls under the category of unnecessary roughness, and that will be a 15-yard penalty and a previous spot foul. Playing rule proposal number three relates to the tuck rule. It modifies the tuck rule so that when a passer begins to bring a ball back to his body in attempting to begin the tuck, and he loses that ball, whether on his way back to his body or after he's completed the tuck, it will now be ruled a fumble. Okay. Incidentally, we had that rule passed. We had two teams that abstained. That would be New England and Washington Redskins. Bruce Allen abstained in favor of the Raiders, I'm sure. So playing rule proposal number four is just a jersey cleanup in the rule book. We're now going to permit teams to allow their fullbacks and their H-backs, F-back tight ends in the 40 numbers, 40 to 49. Proposal number five, it relates to the peelback block. That also was approved. That's the quote, the Cushing hit from this past year. As we talked at length this week, that was illegal, but we had still permitted offensive players blocking back towards their own end line to block low. That's no longer permissible, and that'll be a penalty. And then playing rule proposal number six is obviously the proposal where we're placing restrictions on ball carriers and defensive players initiating forcible contact with the crown of their helmet. Rich?
Oh, yeah, thanks. yeah, fantastic. Wasn't that nice? So playing rule proposal number six, as Jeff said, is just as he described it. There's two, there's two elements to it. Number one, both players have to clearly be outside the tackle box. It applies to a runner or a tackler. It applies when that runner or tackler ducks their head, delivers a forcible blow with the top or crown of their helmet. I thought the process with respect to it, and Jeff and the commissioner can comment on it, was outstanding. We've been going through the process with respect to this rule for a number of years. We've had discussions with NFLPA and the players. We've had the coaches subcommittee. We've had Coach Madden's player safety advisory committee. We've had a lot of people kind of talk to us about this rule and how we should write it and how it should be rolled out, if you will, into our game. And that's where we ended up with today. I thought yesterday was a very productive day because I thought what we heard from the coaches was everybody on board with respect to the player safety aspect of it. Some nervous about how it's going to get coached up right at the start, and some worried about the officiating side of it. I think that those are all the concerns we've heard for a long time as we've talked about it. None of them were new revelations, but they were ones that we needed to work through with them and let them understand our perspective on it. So I thought it was a very productive discussion, and it was one that led to, I thought, a lot of good talks, too, by owners and by coaches with respect to the game, with respect to their respect for the game and the players that play it, and the fact that this is a pretty major change, but one that they think can quickly be adapted to by the players.
Any questions for Rich and Jeff while they're here before we go to...
What was the vote on the crown of the helmet...
31-1.
And Cincinnati was the negative?
Correct.
And also, Jeff, you mentioned no penalty on the instant replay if a flag is thrown when it shouldn't be?
Well, it would be a penalty if the coach didn't have timeouts remain or the coach, for some reason, threw the flag inside of the 2 minutes. It would be a 15-yard penalty. But we would still go ahead and review the play, unlike what happened last year in the Detroit play.
Okay. Thanks.
Real quick, do you guys have an explicit definition of what the crown of the helmet is, and are you aware there might be a little gray area with how it's interpreted by officials?
Yeah, we've got basically four components to the helmet. We've got the face mask, okay. We've got the side. We have the hairline, which is where the face mask connects, and the forehead, and the crown is clearly the top of the helmet. That's what we're referring to.
You know, one of the things when we ended today, one of the things that we're going to do, and we talked about with the coaches, is we're going to quickly get out another tape to all the coaches from Dean Blandino and his people, and we will show the exact plays that are legal, a lot of plays that are legal, and then the plays that will be illegal. And then I think we'll also give them a clear explanation of how it's going to be taught to the on-field officials so they'll understand the mechanics of the call and how the official would make the call.
For both of you, obviously there have been a number of rules enacted over a span of several years now to try to make the game as safe as it possibly can be. Where do you both feel that you are right now, sort of that along that spectrum of what you've done and what more you think can be done in the future?
Well, I always take the perspective that I've been on the committee a long time. I think my first year on the committee was 1994, and that was the year that we put in the defenseless player rules, if you will. They were in the book. We expanded them. And so I've always thought player safety has been at the forefront of our discussion for a long, long time. And I think the game is a game that has gotten safer over time. Where we've really focused on is the big hits, the open field hits, and hits where players truly can't defend themselves. I think in this step, what we were taking is trying to protect the player from himself with respect to this rule. That's probably another step. But I do feel when you watch the tape, when you look at the data, I do believe the game, from a safety standpoint, is in a good place. Doesn't mean we can't do more and doesn't mean we shouldn't do more in the future. But I think right now, I think we feel pretty comfortable where the game is.
We'll get you a video of what Rich was talking about, too.
Yeah, and I might also add, you know, the change we made as it relates to the kickoff have had significant impact in reducing the number of injuries, on the field 2 years ago. And then, you know, from a coaching standpoint, when a rule goes in or when a rule's modified, you know, we take it, we run with it, and you actually see habits changing on the field. The video, as Rich referred to, is the data. You see players... conduct on the field between the snap and the whistle changes as it relates to the type of things that we're going to get out.
You know, but I think we view ourselves as a league that has to be a leader in this area. And I think that hopefully our hope is always that our rule changes can impact those levels below us, high school, youth football, college, whatever it may be. And I think we've had some really good exchanges with the NCAA over the last 4 or 5 years on rules and on how they're going about it. And so we feel pretty good about that. I mean, I was at a high school game a number of years ago, and I remember some woman that I think was my wife was right next to me. She stood up and screamed, "That's a horse collar." And they called it a horse collar, and I was like, man, that's amazing that there's a horse collar in high school football. I really didn't think that. But when we make rule changes, we realize we're trying to push it all the way down and impact the game.
Hey, Rich, how many did you do research into how many times this would have been called?
Yes.
However many years you go back, how many times per year would you have seen this?
Yeah, it's a very good question, Peter. So what we did is we challenged kind of the NFL office guys to take a look along with the officiating department of every single play. I think we used this year week 10 and week 16, every single play. And I think we came up with there would have been 5 in 1 week and 6 in the other week. And so there, in our mind, that's too many. And our hope is that clearly those aren't – that's not 11 fouls. That's hopefully 11 plays that don't occur that way. But
so you're saying that you looked at every play in each of those 2 weeks?
Yes.
And there was a total of 11 times.
Yes.
That would have been called.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll bring them up.
Right on cue, there is Dean Blandino and Al Riveron. Yes.
Sure, we have discussed it. We don't feel this is any more difficult than the other player safety rules that we have, hits on defenseless receivers. The way we're going to teach it is we're looking for to square up the opponent, lower the head, and deliver the blow with the very top crown of the helmet. So the official will be looking at those three things. To make that determination. We understand it happens quickly, but there's an educational process that takes place, and it involves a lot of tape. And we're going to be looking, as to Rich's point, looking at a lot of legal plays so that the officials understand what we don't want called. And I'll let Al kind of talk a little bit about how to be officiated as well.
One of the things we look at, Peter, is when we have a play like that, we have three sets of eyes looking at it. We have three different angles. We have one from the rear, one from the front, and hopefully at least one from the side. We are going to encourage our officials, as to what both Rich and Dean just said, we're going to show them plenty, probably more of the legal hits than of the ones that we think could be fouls. We are going to encourage our officials, when this foul is thrown on the field, to have a conference, to make sure that we have seen what we actually saw, and we're also going to encourage our officials to slow down when they have this type of play and make sure they see, like Dean said, the components of the foul, squaring up, the head down, and the contact with the crown of the helmet.
Jeff, or I mean, one of you guys can speak to it. Were part of the questions that the coaches came to you with to differentiate between what you call the hairline and the crown of the helmet? Because it seems like if you're only calling a penalty with the crown of the helmet, that the hairline, the face mask area, can runners and tacklers still hit cleanly with those areas head to head?
There's no rule that prohibits a runner from using his face mask, nor the hairline. Okay, what we're talking about is keeping the head up. When you're just making contact with the hairline, your head's basically up. Okay, we've said numerous times about bringing the shoulder back into this. We're not gonna not allow a runner to protect himself or to protect the football, or to drop his head in an effort to protect himself against the runner. It's delivering the blow. You know, we'll add this. Over the last day or so, we've received a lot of opinions from former running backs, some in favor of this and some opposed to this. And with respect for all of them, prior to coming in here, I got a phone call from Eddie George. And Eddie George said, "What's going on?" And he took the position that this is going to be a difficult thing to enforce and a difficult way to play this game. And after a 15-minute conversation, he changed his mind. He said, "That makes sense. I would be in favor of that." So basically what our job, our task ahead now is to inform our players, is to inform the officials and communicate why and the reasons behind this change.